Well, brethren, let's turn our Bibles to 1 Peter, and this time chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5. We will read together there the first 5 verses. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 1 to verse 5. So I exhort the elders among you, as a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. Likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another. For God opposes the proud and gives grace to the humble. Oh, brethren, we come to the final installment of messages on the theme of submission and authority, as we have been looking at it through the eyes of one of God's choice servants, the Apostle Peter. I trust by now, as I said in the last session, the pattern should be obvious. Again, the point is that this is not a subject in a little corner of life and living that you handle once in a while and forget about as you carry out your Christian life. But this is the way in which our lives are to be lived consciously as we are seeking to give expression to our worship of God, our gratitude to God who has saved us in such a glorious way. That whether it's in the political sphere or the economic sphere or the domestic sphere, that we are seeking to uphold created order, because that's what he commands, and because it is through this that the cultural mandate can be carried out. Nothing happens when human beings are living by the law of the jungle, when it's complete chaos, and that does not please God. That's not the way he made us. He made us for a purpose, and our lives must be moving in that direction. So in chapter 2 and chapter 3, the Apostle Peter had applied this principle of submission and indeed the opposite of authority to the three spheres that we've just spoken about, the political, the economic, and the domestic. In many ways, one would say that what he was dealing with in the world is finished, because he has reached the most basic unit of society, and it is the family. It is the two that come together in marriage, as a right hand and a left hand working together the best way possible for the glory of God and for the good of his world. However, as Peter draws towards the end of wrestling with the inevitable consequences of upholding the vertical plane in a fallen world, and we said the inevitable consequence is that of suffering unjustly, because we are in the midst of a people that abuse such authority. Upon coming to the end of dealing with this subject of suffering, Peter goes back to the church where he started. The first realm in which we show our response to the grace of God. You recall he talked about loving one another deeply. That should be the natural outworking of our faith and indeed our love for God. He comes back to it. But this time, he's not so much dealing with the John and Mary in the congregation about how you are to love one another or give love one to the other. But he now comes to the vertical relationship. And he begins with those who are in the place of authority. And that's where I want us to end as well. The use of this same vertical relationship in the context of the church. Now, whereas it ought to be obvious and indeed easier to apply these same principles to the context of the church, many of us have come from backgrounds of crass congregationalism that has indeed put government in the church the other way around, so that the tail wags the dog. And because that's our background, it becomes completely foreign to us to imagine elders in the church exercising actual authority. We seem to be able to understand it happening out there in the political sphere, although some people seem to have problems even with that. We seem to very well understand it happening in the workplace with supervisors and managers and employers and directors and so on. Perhaps we seem to understand its application between parents and children, and maybe between husbands and wives. But for some reason related to our backgrounds, when we come into the church, we are of the view that the leaders of the church, we lead them. Now, I'll be the first one to confess that in the earlier part of my Christian life, I don't know where I picked it up from, but that was my understanding. And when we reformed our church's thinking to a more biblical position, I've never forgotten one member of my church visiting me at home after we had done a seminar on this subject for 2 weekends and saying to me, he's a very honest man, I love him, he's still in my church up to now. He said to me, Pastor, I disagree with you. That's not the way it's supposed to be. So I said, well, then you tell me what the way it's supposed to be. He says, you see, when we have members' meetings, we members tell you what you're supposed to do. And then you go out there and do it. Then at the next members' meeting, you come and report to us how you've done the work. If we're happy, well, we give you more work. If we are not, we express our strong disagreement and hope you will do better as you go away to work again. Well, as I said, he's a fine, well, at that time he was a fine young lad. He's now married with 4 children, a professor in his actual work. But I said to him, give me chapter and verse. He almost scratched all the hair out of his head. And that's where we need to begin. We need to be biblical. We shouldn't just continue what we have imbibed over the years. So then, what is Peter saying here? First of all, he is saying that elders of the church have authority. And it is the authority of a shepherd among sheep. It is the authority of an actual overseer. Look at the way he puts it in verse 1 and verse 2, the first part. He says, so I exhort the elders among you as a fellow elder and as a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight. 2 words there. Shepherd, or as some of your versions may say, feed the flock. I'll deal with that in a moment. And also provide oversight. Exercise oversight. What is the content of those words? The word translated oversight, rather shepherd, is a word that includes both the idea of feeding and also the idea of directing and ruling. In fact, the two go together, and that's the reason why the imagery of a shepherd is so telling. Because a shepherd doesn't simply open the gate and then the sheep go wherever they wander to, and he's having to run after them, panting all the way, make sure they are not lost in the process. He leads them to streams of water. He leads them to green pastures that they may feed over there. We find, therefore, that in a number of passages in Scripture where this word is used, you certainly can't miss the application of directing, guiding, and ruling. Let me quickly show you 1 in Matthew and 3 in the book of Revelation. Matthew and chapter 2. In fact, almost all of them have something to do with Psalm 2. Revelation 2, rather, Matthew 2 and verse 6. I begin reading from verse 5. They told him, in Bethlehem of Judea, that's where the Christ would be born. For it is written by the prophet, and you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler. There it is. And then the phrase, who will shepherd my people Israel. Now clearly, the issue that was here was that the wise men had come with the message that they understood that a king has been born. And consequently, these men were going to the scriptures to see where this king was to be born. The one who caused a real threat to the political leaders, the political establishment at that time. And the phrase there is that this ruler would shepherd, he would lead, he would guide, he would direct the nation of Israel. So this is more than just feeding. Herod was not going to be worried if someone was going to be born to just feed the Israelites. He was threatened because this person was to rule the Israelites. Revelation chapter 2. Revelation 2. I begin reading with verse 26, although the phrase in verse 27. Revelation 2, verse 26. The one who conquers and who keeps my works until the end, to him I will give authority over the nations. What will he do with that authority? Verse 27. And he will rule them. Exactly the same word that Peter uses. With a rod of iron, as when heathen pots are broken in pieces, even as I myself have received, listen to this, authority from my Father. The point there is not simply feeding, because that's not what you do with pottery. He's talking about actual power there. To do with this pottery as you please. Even as I myself have received this authority, this power. Chapter 12. Again, exactly the same word. Chapter 12 and verse 5. The woman being referred to here, she gave birth to a male child, one who is to rule, again that's the word, all the nations with a rod of iron. But her child was caught up to God and to his throne. An obvious picture there of the Lord Jesus Christ. But again, the word shepherd there is in the form of ruling. He's not simply feeding all the nations. He's coming as Lord of Lords and King of Kings. And at the name of Jesus, every knee will bow. There's authority there. And finally, chapter 19 and verse 15. Chapter 19 and verse 15. From his mouth comes a sharp sword with which to strike down the nations. And he will, there it is again, rule them with a rod of iron. He will tread the white winepress of the fury of the wrath of God, the Almighty. On his robe and on his thigh, he has a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Now, brethren, that's the word that Peter uses here. He is saying, exercise this God-given authority in order to lead and guide the flock of God the way in which a shepherd leads and guides the flock. That's what you are to do as elders. And you are to do it as a form of oversight. Back to our text. 1 Peter 5. Shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight. In other words, looking after and caring for the people of God. we have said that when it comes to the issue of authority, you think in two ways that develop a healthy tension. First of all, there is the fact that this institution has a head, and that head has a purpose for this institution. This institution must achieve something. And what must it achieve? Well, it's the spiritual parallel of the natural cultural mandate. Be fruitful. Multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. That's what the Great Commission is all about. When Jesus was leaving the planet, he didn't say, well, have a jolly good time. I hope you still be intact when I come back. No. He said, make disciples of all nations. Bring them into this colony of faith through baptism. And in that colony, instruct them in the ways of obedience. And I'm going to be with you. That's the command he gives. The equivalent of be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, and bring it on its knees at the foot of the cross, worshipping God through me. And I will be with you. Ultimately, I am the conqueror bent on conquering. You are my troops. And therefore, I'm giving you these generals of the army to lead you. That's the one side. Then there is the other. And that is the welfare of the flock, the struggles they have to go through, the physical, emotional, spiritual struggles. They need to have their wounds bandaged. They need to have balm applied there. They need to be strengthened. They need to find wholeness. They need all those aspects. And it's all part of this shepherding. There's a sense in which they should feel cared for on one hand and yet not spoilt on the other, because there's work to be done and you are to lead them that way. And that's exactly the same in every sphere. Remember, we spoke about leadership in the political sphere. It's exactly the same thing. There must be progress. And at the same time, there must be the sense of being provided for, being protected, being within a context of laws that provide equity. But at the same time, the nation being productive. The same thing in the economic sphere. Those institutions that we refer to as companies, even if it's the context of a home with the extra hands that have been given, it's because the home is the minutest economic institution that in due season multiplies itself over God's world. And those of us who again are in positions of leadership in the context of the home are mindful that this is what we are doing in God's world. And therefore, we're not just spoiling our children who are growing up under us, but we are discipling them, we are disciplining them, we are developing them into responsible citizens in God's world. So there's still the purpose for which we have been made heads, and yet at the same time, they should want to be party to this family because we care for them.
We love them. We provide for them. We nurture them. We nourish them. It's the same in the church. Please see the parallels. It's the same. The principles remain the same. So there must be this oversight. The church must be like a well-ordered home where its inhabitants are being lovingly groomed and discipled to be fruitful, to multiply, to fill the earth, and to subdue it. That's your task as elders. And Peter is saying here, do it. That's why Jesus has put you there. Do it. Lead the flock. Feed the flock. Oversee the flock. Ensure that the purpose for which the church has been put there is being carried out to the glory of God. That's the way you carry out oversight. However, he goes on to deal with the right way, the right attitude, the spiritual attitude that should pervert this carrying out of authority. And he does it by pitting the right way against the wrong, or better still, the wrong first, and then puts the right way there. He says this. First of all, verse 8. Not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you. In other words, you must have a desire to do this work. It mustn't simply be because some strong-willed leader pushed you into the position of eldership. As Paul says to Timothy in 1 Timothy 3, that there must be the desire there. He who desires the office of bishop or elder desires a noble task. The desire must be there. The willingness must be there. The engine that causes you to move must be inside you rather than on the outside. That's the first. The second is that you must not be inspired by mercenary motives, but rather by the same inward conviction, which is because you know the Lord wants you to do this. Let's look at the way he puts it. He says that, not for shameful gain, but eagerly. Not for shameful gain, but eagerly. It's very easy, especially for those of us who get paid in our work as overseers, for us to be engaged in this work merely as a job for money. I recall a number of years ago, a young man working with me, helping out in the office, while he was applying everywhere possible for a job, finally saying to me, he sensed a call to the ministry. So I said to him, well, let's keep praying about it. Well, a few months later, he was offered a job and he started working. So when we met after he had worked, I think, at least 6 months, I said to him, well, let's talk about that sense of call. He burst out laughing. Pastor, I don't know what I was talking about. I think I just needed a job. At least he was honest.
But we have too many people who are providing oversight in the church with absolutely no sense of call from God. It's all about the paycheck. And consequently, at the first scent of trouble, they run away instead of bearing with the situation in order to correct it for God's glory. Or if they don't run away, they let the tail wag the dog. Always first listening out to what people want to hear and then turning it into a sermon and delivering it. And consequently, the churches are not healthy. They are what the Apostle Paul refers to in 2 Timothy chapter 4. I'm sure you know the passage. About the people who call the tune and the preachers dance. Giving them what their itching ears want to hear. Paul is saying, don't do that. Don't let money come into the inspiration for the work. Yes, you need the money, but that's not what brings you there. It's that the Lord has called you to provide oversight to the flock. Also, you must not carry the people with you while they are kicking and screaming. But show them by your own example what it really means to be a disciple of Christ. Let's quickly see that. Peter says, verse 3, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. This happens anywhere. It happens in a country that has tyrants and dictators for leaders. Half the nation has run away. And every amount that is coming in through the economic activity of the nation is simply going into their Switzerland accounts. Happens there. A people oppressed. It happens in workplaces where, especially in engineering fields, you go to the sites, everybody else is bending over the work, they are dirty, they are sweating, they are hungry, can't wait to knock off. And then there's the foreman under the tree enjoying a hamburger with soda. Still as clean as he was when he reported for work. That's what creates animal farms. If you've read George Orwell's story, that ran the farm owner off the field. You need to be an example. If you say the Christian church is supposed to be evangelizing, well, you should be in the field evangelizing. If you say that the Christian church is to be involved in missions, you yourself should clearly be seen as a person passionate about missions. If you say the Christian church should give to the Lord's cause, as secret as your giving might be, it should still be you leading by example. If you say that the Christian church should look after its families, in the individual families, in a God-ordained way, according to His instruction, well, you should not be raising villains and vagabonds under your roof. Lead by example. In everything, you must sweat so that they can see what God wants them to be in true spiritual maturity. The last point in this spiritual attitude and vision is the eye on the coming reward. The eye on the coming reward. It says, verse 4, "And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory." We said that you hold this work in tension, and it's not easy. It often leaves you drained, often leaves you on your knees pleading with God for grace upon grace, so that on the one hand the church is achieving its purpose in the world, and on the other the atmosphere in the church is one that is vibrant and healthy and joyful, and everything that oozes out, that inevitable energies from people who love the Lord and are grateful for what He's doing in them. All because you are playing that role that you ought to play as a shepherd. And often you long for rest, because that's not easy. Holding those two in tension ain't easy. But you look forward to the day when there will be the last trumpet call of God, when all history comes to an end, and the great shepherd of the sheep comes to reward His gallant soldiers. That's where you collapse. When the work is over, and He is now rewarding you, saying, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Keep your eyes there. Because often, oversight work is a thankless job on earth. I'm sure you've seen that, those of you who are elders. Whenever there's a problem in the church, it's these elders are doing a bad job. Nobody says, "But what am I doing?" So with them. Like, Americans hardly enjoy soccer, but maybe it's the same thing with what is called American football. When you start losing, the coach gets fired. He's the first one to blame. Fire him. He's doing a bad job. It's often like that in the church. But oh, how we need to keep our eyes on the great shepherd of the sheep. The chief shepherd. He knows the truth. He knows what happens in secret when we are busy poring over the sacred pages to feed the flock. When we are on our knees crying for each individual flock among the people of God. He knows the difficult situations that surround the church and permeate the minds of God's people, and often causing them not to do what they ought to do. The diseases that ravage the flock. He knows the wolves that often arise from the midst of the congregation. As Paul said, even with tears running down his cheeks. They will arise. They will scatter the sheep. He knows all that. And he comes to reward faithfulness. 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 Well, very well, let's quickly hurry on. What about the flock? What is your attitude to be towards those who are your elders as they exercise authority over you? The answer is found for us in verse 5. Essentially, it is this. Instead of using the energy of youth to rebel against them, you should submit to their leadership. Verse 5 says, likewise, you who are younger, and he's deliberately using that word as contrasted to the word elders, which means those who are older. Likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another, for God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Or, as the author of the epistle to the Hebrews puts it, in chapter 13 and verse 17, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who will have to give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with groaning, for that would be of no advantage to you. That's your responsibility. It is that of submission. Therefore, as elders, prayerfully seek God's direction as to how to move the church forward in order for it, remember the phrase, to be fruitful, to multiply, to fill the earth and subdue it. Spiritually speaking, the members should submit to their leadership. To their leadership. That's the only way they'll be able to go forward. Submitting to their leadership. What it means is that leaders in the church don't do God's work while everybody else is sleeping behind there in the back seat. The church implements those grand programs, supports all those grand programs. So that the church can fulfill its responsibility. Remember, the political sphere, the economic sphere, the domestic sphere, it's exactly the same. Exactly the same. As the church. Yes. Often there are meetings where the leaders will bring up issues in order to get input. They will often bring the fruit of their discussion and prayerful consideration before the church in order again to get input. But please, let's not get the notion that that's where the authority structure lies. The authority structure lies with Christ under shepherds. And I think that must be obvious who Christ under shepherds are. It's what parents in a home do when their children are grown up. Back home, our youngest is now 17. And the oldest still at home is in the mid-20s. And we often have caucus meetings as a family. We've discussed issues as husband and wife over a long time. We've sharpened them up. Perhaps it's a home we want to buy. We're thinking in terms of the area or whatever else it might be. We're thinking in terms of getting a new car, what kind of car it would be. And we call everybody in and we say, this is what we think the next stage ought to be. Want to hear them. They are no longer toddlers. In fact, some of them know how to handle computers much better than we do. And while we're talking, they're already Googling. We bring all that in. It's helpful. But rarely do we ever think that because there are only two of us and there are five of them, that they will finally say when we say, sorry, we can't go that way, we're still going this way, that one of them will say, well, look, let's vote. Knowing very well that we'll be defeated. It's exactly the same point. Let's never forget that leadership is leadership. Don't need to be a genius to guess that. To lead is to lead. This is especially important when it comes to corrective discipline. And I've often, in our church context, especially when we're beginning to reform in this area, I've often taken the congregation to 1 Corinthians 5. And I've said there that if Paul had said to the Corinthian church, vote over this matter, whoever that guy was would have gotten away with it. Because Paul said to the Corinthian church that they were even proud, boasting about this guy who was having an affair with his father's wife. Instead of being ashamed, instead of being full of grief. And so Paul says, look, I've already passed judgment on the matter. Your role will be that of implementation. When you meet, kick him out. We need to appreciate that. That in any sphere, leadership disciplines. In the state, leadership disciplines. In the workplace, leadership discipline. In the home, leadership discipline. And then someone says, but not in the church. Well, the onus is on them to show why God should reverse that. So what's your responsibility as a flock there in the midst of such stark reality? This is what I would say. Pray for your elders. Because their work is demanding. You are not perfect. Neither are they. But God has placed on them this responsibility of ruling, guiding, shepherding the flock to achieve the purpose for which the church is there. And oh, what a task is on their hands. Pray for them. Never forget to pray for them. Make it your business to implore God that grace upon grace would be upon them so they may lead the flock appropriately, that the fruitfulness of the church might be evident. through its multiplication, its growth in due season, its carrying out the mandate, the gospel getting more and more ground in this fallen and dark world, souls coming to Christ and being raised up in godliness through Him. That's a huge task. It's a huge responsibility. And you do well to pray for them. Well, very quickly, as we finally wrap up, remember the principle of leadership does not change in any of the spheres that we have dealt with. It doesn't. Because it's the same God with the same vertical relationship that He wants to ensure is in place. It is that of human beings called to be God's regents in the world, carrying out His purpose so that the world is going towards the design and end for which He made it. It's the same everywhere. And that's why we need to see our religion applied in that vertical relationship, whether from the bottom up or from the top down. Granted, the world abuses it. Terribly so. Says absolute power corrupts absolutely. And we see it everywhere. However, it does not absolve Christians from the duty of submission. God knows. That's the world in which He has placed us, and we need to submit. Therefore, avoid the spirit of the age. Stubbornness, arrogance, avoid it. Show your godliness by ready, happy, joyful submission in the vertical sphere, so that they can see the difference. And especially with the church, within the church, let the world look inside and see a people who recognize this vertical relationship and joyfully yield to its leadership, so that what they see out there, they shake their heads when they come into the church and ask the question, how? How? How can this be? We do it in our homes. We do it in our workplaces, everywhere. And consequently, the world wants to come to us for guidance, for leadership. Realize, as we have seen in this last message, that the church is not a democracy, but a theocracy, with elders as Christ's under shepherds. Those of us who are elders must make sure that the mind of Christ is being taught and obeyed in the church. Let us teach the world how much we love and respect God by upholding the vertical relationship, even as we seek His grace to help us do that. To Him be glory in the church, now and forevermore. Amen.